From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, Scratch Beginnings. It's the real-life story of a college grad who set out with $25 and a sleeping bag to see if he could make ends meet within a year. Also, the Coexist Comedy Tour. It's a show with five Northern California comedians, an atheist, a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, and a Buddhist. First, these are tough times for most local arts groups. Ticket sales are down, as are donations. Which groups are most affected? Are any at risk of closing? And what does all this mean for the public? Arts reporter and reviewer Jeff Hudson joins me. Jeff, welcome back to Insight.
Good to be here.
As far as you can tell, which local arts group is hardest hit?
The group that certainly went into problems first was Foothill Theater. Back in the summer, they launched an emergency fund drive, and they raised $90,000 during the months of July and August and September and were able to launch their fall season. They needed to raise another $147,000, and when the by year's end, and when the stock market got real wobbly in October, it became pretty clear that that wasn't going to happen.
So what is going to happen instead?
Well, they had a meeting of their board this week, and they decided that they're going to proceed with what they're calling a demi-season, a three-show season in 2009. This is smaller than the five or six or seven show seasons that they've done in recent years. And this is going to be designed to sort of move them forward. In the words of their artistic director, Carolyn Howarth, by staying alive into next year, we're buying time. Time to maybe win the game, maybe lose, maybe tie, but at least we won't be forfeiting. So it was a decision that their board considered carefully, and they thought about possibly closing the theater and decided, well, let's just see if we can keep it going a little bit longer.
I saw a press release from Foothill Theater just a couple of days ago, and in it they seemed to concede that, quote, people are getting tired of it, i.e. Constantly asking for money. Were they really hearing that from people, that the people are just that it was just too much?
I think that given the situation at the time, it's kind of like a radio pledge drive where, you know, you can only go on for so long asking for funds, and sometimes the drive ends and you're a little short and you say, okay, well, we'll just make do with what we've got now and then try again later.
Well, if Foothill Theater is, or at least appears to be, the local arts group that's hardest hit, but they're still able to put together what is a demi-season, then I guess that could be considered some kind of good news.
I think it would be considered better news than having the theater close.
What about other companies? Are there other companies that are having particular problems right now?
Well, Sacramento Ballet has gone public with their situation regarding Nutcracker tickets. They were at about 65% of projected sales for Nutcracker back in October, and it's picked up some since then. But Nutcracker for the Sacramento Ballet is the big strong horse that pulls the sleigh, if you follow my meaning. Nutcracker accounts for about 50% of their performances for the season and about 50% of their ticket income. So if Nutcracker doesn't do well, that has spillover effects on the other shows that they might do over the course of the season.
But isn't that a general problem to be so exposed to the fortunes of one show?
It is. There is currently only one holiday ballet that has popularity across the board, and it's produced by every ballet company in every major city in America that I'm aware of, and that is Nutcracker.
Yeah. I'm talking with Jeff Hudson, arts reporter and reviewer for Capital Public Radio and the Sacramento News and Review. We're talking about how these tough economic times are affecting local arts groups. Let's turn now to a group that has a very particular challenge right now. That's California Musical Theater. Not only is it affected by the current economic downturn, but they were brought inadvertently into the controversy over Proposition 8. Remind us what went on here.
Their artistic director, Scott Eckern, had made a contribution to the Yes on 8 campaign. And when this was noticed around, it was actually after the election, a great deal of controversy was generated from some, not only within town, but quite a bit from New York and from out of town, where a number of people involved in musical theater professionally in New York became very angry and made phone calls and so forth. Mr. Eckern resigned, and the organization thanked him very much for his 25 years of service, and his organization is now moving on. But obviously, it's a difficult situation when your artistic director becomes a lightning rod in a much larger public discussion of an issue that's very, very controversial and was recently the subject of a closely contested election. That's a tough, tough position for any arts organization to be in.
And one thing that occurs to me here is that on the one hand, musical theater is a branch of the arts, a branch of life, where you tend to find a lot of gay people.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, California musical theater's audience is big on, I guess you might call, conservative types.
There are people all up and down the political spectrum that you will meet in their audience. You will find some very young people who would have what you would call progressive attitudes, and you'll find some very conservative people who I'm sure voted in favor of Proposition 8. And you also find members of the gay community and the lesbian community who were very vehemently opposed to Proposition 8 and said so.
California Musical Theater is bringing in and had made this decision some time ago to bring in a gay-themed musical early next year.
Avenue Q. It's coming in March.
And was there any reason to think that production might have been in jeopardy if Scott Eckern had remained at the California Musical Theater?
Because no,
there were talk of boycotts and so on.
There was some talk of a boycott. Jeff Witte, who is one of the creators of that show, said that he actually called up Scott Eckern and spoke with him and sort of made peace with him. So I don't think there was any effort on the part of the creators of Avenue Q to pull that show, and the contracts were all signed and delivered. So the show is coming. The question is going to be how the community reacts and the various aspects of the community reacts, and I dare say many people are very curious to see how this will come out.
Separate from Avenue Q, do you know how California Musical Theater is doing right now with ticket sales?
Everyone is struggling with ticket sales right now, pretty much across the board. I wouldn't say that they have it any better or any worse than anybody else. The thing with musicals is that they're very large. They involve a big cast and usually some musicians in the pit orchestra and so forth. And so that kind of show has to play to a very high capacity in the theater just to break even, somewhere higher than 90%, usually up around 95%. And so, you know, if there are a lot of empty seats, it can be a problem.
As challenging as these times are for the arts groups, it can yield some opportunities, I guess, for the public. There's a nice deal going on with theater companies, isn't there?
There is. Three of the local theater companies that have smaller stages, you know, 150 to 250 seating capacity. This would be the Sacramento Theater Company, Capitol Stage, and the B Street Theater have offered a very unusual ticket plan, which I haven't seen them offer at all in past years. It's three shows for $33, and you get one at each of those three theater companies. And I haven't been to the movies lately, but isn't $11 a show pretty close to the movies?
Yeah, that's a pretty competitive price, especially for live theater, I would think.
Right, and so this is an effort to get people in the door and enjoying the show. So from the point of view of the audience, you can kind of take that, the glass is half full type look at this, because there's a really good opportunity. And there are other discounts out there as well. I don't want to imply that this is
sure.
The only one.
But Sacramento Theater Company, B Street, and Capitol Stage are all equity houses.
Correct. They have professional actors who are members of Actors Equity. And usually at this time of year during Christmas, the theater companies mount an audience-friendly show, family-oriented show, and sell lots of tickets at $25 or $30 perhaps. And just like the department stores, they do pretty well on that, and then that money gets them through the lean months of January, February, and March. This year, these three theater companies are offering tickets at less than half of full price. And so, you know, that raises the question, okay, what are they going to do in the spring?
Well, but it's not like any of these companies were exactly booming financially with full price tickets.
It's been difficult for everybody. And of course, this relates in turn to the economy. The Sacramento area has been hit really hard. This is well known in the housing market. The housing sales prices peaked out in 2005 and have been falling pretty steeply ever since. And it's been very hard. People are struggling to make their house payments. People are looking at foreclosures, and there have been thousands of foreclosures. And it's hard to afford ticket prices, buy tickets to a show if you're losing your house.
I'm talking with Jeff Hudson, arts reporter and reviewer for Capital Public Radio. The last time there was a big downturn that affected the local arts groups was in the mid-90s in Sacramento. What happened then?
Well, it actually started right around 1989. There was a big event called the Loma Prieta earthquake that triggered some economic problems for a lot of California financial institutions. And the Soviet Union ceased to exist, and so there was a lot of cutbacks on military spending. Housing prices in the Sacramento area dipped from 1990 until about 1995. I very aware of this because I moved to this area in 1995 and got a house. And the house I bought was $30,000 less than the previous person had paid for it. The damage to arts organizations occurred over this time because ticket sales were slow. It's no accident that the old Sacramento Symphony went bankrupt and disbanded in 1996. The economy was starting to pick up. The real estate market was starting to pick up. But at that point, they were so loaded with debt that they just couldn't continue. There were also financial problems for the Sacramento Theater Company right around that time, also for the ballet and for the Sacramento Opera. And there was a city bailout at that time that provided them with some money to get them through that financial crisis. During the period from 1990 to 1995, housing prices came down, 20, 25, 30% across this region. This time around, housing prices have come down in many neighborhoods closer to 40% and in some neighborhoods 50%. And so that's a more dramatic fall in real estate prices. And we have not seen the bottom of this recession. I was reading the newspaper this morning and the New York Times had a nice article saying, yeah, we are going into what's probably the longest recession since the end of World War II. So we have a ways to go yet.
You mentioned the city bailout during that last downturn to help local arts groups. Given the enormous pressures on local government right about now, it's hard to see any city bailouts.
I can't picture a city bailout coming right now. The city is strapped for money. The city is talking about closing certain fire stations. I'm talking about the city of Sacramento closing certain fire stations one day a week and things like that. I don't think the city bailout is a realistic alternative this time.
And Sacramento's ongoing lack of big corporate presence, that's nothing to do with the current circumstances, but it's an ongoing challenge, means that local arts groups and not to mention certain professional sports teams can't rest on that to support them when other parts of the economy are going bad.
Absolutely. I think back to about 2 years ago, I was at the Mondavi Center listening to a concert by the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. And Cincinnati as a metropolitan area is the 24th largest. Sacramento is the 26th largest, according to the stats that I just checked. And Cincinnati has a nice full-time orchestra that tours, goes around to places like the Mondavi Center and other parts of the country. Sacramento Philharmonic is a wonderful organization, doesn't tour, is not a full-time orchestra. And so I was kind of thinking to myself, well, what does Cincinnati have that we don't have here in Sacramento? And the answer is they've got Procter & Gamble, and they've got about six other Fortune 500 firms that are headquartered there and are active philanthropically. Sacramento, by comparison, the Fortune 500 company that's here is the McClatchy Company. And as you know, the McClatchy Company has had huge declines in revenues at its newspapers, has laid off a lot of people and bought out a lot of people and is downsizing. Another company that's been active in Sacramento supporting music and theater groups is Raley's. And Raley's, of course, is also being challenged. The grocery business is extremely competitive. And we've got Costco and Walmart, and the Save Mart chain has come into the Sacramento area, and Trader Joe's. And lots of competition in the grocery trade.
Although no local arts groups have closed, at least no prominent ones, there was a Northern California arts group that folded just last week.
Very, very recently. American Musical Theater in San Jose, which had been around for 74 years, I believe. A presenting organization very similar to the Broadway Sacramento series here that's put on by California Musical Theater. They just couldn't handle the debts, and they've laid off their employees. They are, by the way, having Avenue Q coming there as well. And so they're going to finish up with one or two shows that they have booked, and then that will be the end of that organization.
And then finally, Jeff, one last element perhaps in the story, not the major one, but news organizations have scaled down their coverage of the arts too, which presumably means there's less awareness in the public of the shows that are out there.
There's certainly fewer opportunities to read about them in the newspaper. The Sacramento Bee has reviewed fewer and fewer plays over the last couple of years. The Sacramento News and Review shrank the theater section. They no longer have the short capsule reviews every week of the plays that are currently running. They just have one or two reviews of shows, but you'd have to go online to the website to find the shorter capsules. Mm-hmm. And then similarly, Capital Public Radio is reviewing fewer plays than it has in most years. And of course, you know, we've had our share of cutbacks here too.
Jeff Hudson, arts reporter and reviewer for Capital Public Radio and the Sacramento News and Review. Jeff, thank you so much for all this.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. There's more about our guests and topics at capradio.org/insight. Coming up, Scratch Beginnings, the real-life story of a college grad who set out with $25 in a sleeping bag to see if he could make ends meet within a year. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can download previous editions of Insight. Find our archives at capradio.org/insight. A new local organization is calling for all gays and lesbians nationwide to call in sick one day this week. Tomorrow in Insight, Tina Reynolds tells you why she formed Equality Action Now and what they hope to accomplish through the nationwide Day Without a Gay event. Also, a British pantomime-style version of Cinderella is playing in Sacramento. We'll talk with director Peggy Shannon and composer Greg Coffin about the musical. One of the actors will join us too. A couple of years ago, a young college grad wanted to know if the American dream was still alive. So Adam Shepard set out with $25, a sleeping bag, and little else to see what kind of life he could make for himself in a year. Once it was over, Shepard wrote a book about what happened and what he learned. It's called Scratch Beginnings. He's in town with a book event this evening. Right now he's in our studio. Adam Shepard, welcome to Insight.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. This is great.
What gave you the idea, after you'd earned your college degree, to go off with $25 and live essentially like a homeless person?
Right. Well, there were two things that kind of motivated me here. First, I read a book called Nickel and Dimed, where Barbara Ehrenreich kind of wrote on the death of the American dream. And that kind of, I read that in college, it kind of got under my skin a little bit, just her attitude. But also, I just had the opportunity at Merrimack College, $35,000 a year, to look at a whole different culture of entitlement, a whole generation that just seemed to not appreciate what makes the American spirit so strong. And so I wanted to go out and discover that.
You said that Barbara Ehrenreich's book, which sold many copies and was quite acclaimed, got under your skin and you didn't like her attitude. What was it you didn't like?
Yeah, I think she it just seemed like she looked at the people she was working with, she looked at this lifestyle as below her, as she just had this kind of condescension, and she just had this attitude like you can't make it. She was buying $40 pants, sleeping in hotels. She never got a roommate. I mean, it seemed like she wasn't even trying. Now, what happens if you do take a job with a smile on your face, you shop at the Goodwill, you get a roommate? What happens if you really do try? Can you make it?
Just for people who are not familiar with the book, Barbara Ehrenreich is a journalist. She spent the better part of a year living in a variety of communities, taking minimum wage type jobs and documenting what happened to her during that time. Did you conceive of what you were doing as a rebuttal to Barbara Ehrenreich?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it started with that and then extended beyond into just, you know, more general issues dealing with my generation. But yeah, for sure. I mean, because the thing is, Jeff, if you look at the people she's talking about that aren't making it, my goodness, who is making it now, right now? Hispanics that come here don't even speak the language. They're making it. And my thing is, if they can make it, can anybody make it? And that's what I wanted to look at. I wanted to meet the guys in homeless shelters, the guys that worked at the moving company. I wanted to meet these guys that she says is not making it.
When you say people are making it, and you gave as an example Hispanic immigrants, there are a lot of immigrants who are not doing too well. How do you define making it?
Yeah, and I think that's such a good point, is there are those that are not doing well, and there are those that are doing well. And that's the whole point here, is what is the difference? What is the difference between one that's making it and one that isn't? How do I define making it? I can't define making it. I mean, if you ask 10 people their definition of the American dream, you're going to get 10 different answers. My thing is, making it for me is taking your life to the next level every day. And there are a lot of guys that are doing that.
If I understand correctly, you believe that Barbara Ehrenreich, when she was researching her book Nickel and Dimed, sort of cut some corners, took it a little too easily. You also came into this with the advantages of a good family, a good education. You speak well. How do you know that you were able to truly make it on your own.
Oh, absolutely. There's plenty of criticism that for this story that I don't embody the poverty that I'm speaking about. And I think that's a very good point, because I'm young, I'm healthy, I've got two loving parents that taught me work ethic and budgeting. And I think that's why this story is about Derek and Marco and BG and regular dudes in and out of the homeless shelter that are making it or not. And I think that's the whole point here, is that I made it for certain reasons, and Derek made it for certain reasons. And I think that's the whole reason I've come forward with this book, is to say, okay, why did I make it? This is why I made it. And so, of course, I mean, people say, of course, you can make it. Well, there are plenty of single mothers with children that are making it. There are plenty of guys like Derek that don't have high school educations that are making it. And like I said before, there are plenty of Hispanics that are making it.
Adam Shepard is author of Scratch Beginnings, Me, $25 and the Search for the American Dream. He speaks tonight at the Avid Reader in Sacramento. What did your family make of your idea to go off for a year with $25?
Yeah, I mean, there was a mixed reaction, because I've got this great college education, and then it's like, okay, I'm going to go be homeless for a while, you know. So they were certainly a little skeptical and nervous, but, you know, and my mom, she was just excited to get me off the couch, to get me out there doing something, you know. But I think they understood kind of the experience that I wanted to have, the people I want to meet. I think they understood the social issues that I was after. And so they were nervous, but they were excited for me.
What were the rules you set for yourself as you set off on this year-long adventure?
The final goal was to have $2,500, a car, and an apartment. And the goals were, or the outline, the guidelines for me, I couldn't use my college education, I can't use my credit history, and I can't use my contacts. So basically, I'm not truly starting over from scratch. You know, I've still got my college education in my head, but the idea was for me on paper that I couldn't use my network. I had to start over from scratch.
Did you ever feel the need to pretend to be less educated than you are?
That's such a good question, because you would think I would have to walk into the shelter in particular and dumb down my language and use different. And I think that's the first kind of epiphany, if you will, that I had was, and the first stereotype that was broken, is I was really able to connect with these guys. And sure, there were what I had stereotyped as the typical homeless guy and just the old fat bearded dude with whiskey on their breath. That's the picture of homelessness that I had. But for me to meet 20 and 30 and 40 year old guys that were ambitious, that spoke well, you know, I didn't have to change who I was. I connected with these guys like you wouldn't believe.
Did you get into any or find yourself in any dangerous situations of one kind or another?
Yeah, my parents in particular were concerned for my safety. And the first night, I mean, my goodness, Charleston is, you know, lovely and Gone with the Wind and the waterfront, and it's a great. But then there's the other side of Charleston, which was pretty shady. But I do get into a fight later in the story once I'm outside. I mean, and that's if you don't read the book for anything else, read it for chapter 15. I really learned some lessons there. But the thing about the shelter is the doors are always locked on both sides. There's a security officer. I mean, it was a pretty secure situation that I was in.
How often did you, if you did, find yourself in a position where you went, what am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Yeah, that's it. I don't think I ever second-guessed what I was after, and I really wanted to immerse myself here. But there were times that I wondered if this was really, was it worth it for me, or what was I doing? And I think what kept me going, what kept me motivated, was that there are guys sleeping alongside me, that are working alongside me, that have some pretty incredible stories to tell, and they've got it much, much worse than I do. And if they can do it, I can do it. And I think that's what was so great here, was that I was able to tell my story, but then Derek, Omar, and BG, I could tell all these other stories.
Well, you've mentioned some of the people that you met. How did the people that you met relate to you?
Oh, and coming from my background in basketball, I've always had this. I've always been able to relate with a wide variety of people, cultures, everything. And so we connected. I mean, I had my floppy hair and my short shorts and my tall socks. So I was the goofy kid. But I think I didn't go in and I wasn't cocky. I went in and listened. I went in at the moving company in particular. I went in and just worked hard, you know, and kept my mouth shut. And so by doing that, they came to me rather than me walking in like with an arrogance like, oh, look, here I am. And so I was really able to connect with these guys. And that's what's so great about this. And the friendships I have with these guys now, you know, the connection I have with these guys now, it's definitely been a special experience for me.
Did anyone that you meet on the streets in the homeless shelter say, what are you doing here?
You know, and I wish they would have. I mean, it was kind of a hit to my ego that nobody, you know, came up and said, hey, you should be at UCLA. What are you doing here? Nobody. I mean, and I was surprised. But that's the thing. I mean, I was one of five or six guys that were in our mid-20s at the shelter. And so it wasn't, I was a clean-cut dude, but it wasn't like I stuck out like you would think. You know, I wasn't your typical homeless guy, sure. But nobody, you know, nobody came up. Even when I would journal at night, nobody came up and said, what are you doing? Well, maybe because everybody at the shelter is a writer.
Did you change your appearance in any way that you wouldn't otherwise have done so that you would fit in, perhaps?
Yeah, I have a to-do list in my life of all these things I want to do, and one is to grow a mustache for a month because I can't grow facial hair. And so that so I used this experience, this time, to do that. And so I had this absolutely scraggly, look, my face was dirty kind of beard that I tried to grow and to try to fit in a little bit, but it didn't work. But like I said, I mean, I was able to connect. I mean, I really, once after the first 2 weeks at the shelter where I was just off in the corner by myself, I was really able to connect with these guys.
My guest is Adam Shepherd, author of Scratch Beginnings. It's about the time he spent when he set off to find out if the American dream is still alive. He took $25 in a sleeping bag and spent almost a year to see what he could make of his life. What was your degree? What did you study at university? What was your plan when you were at university?
Yeah, I got my degree in business and Spanish. And so I think if I didn't do this, and I went to my plan was to go, I wish I was still playing, well, this has been great, but my plan was to go play professional basketball. And so my career lasted in Germany about 36 hours, and I was home, and I think...
Why?
What happened? Oh, man, because I shot terribly. And I mean, that's what we do. That's what white dudes do. We shoot. And if you don't shoot well, then you get to come home, so...
But you actually had a job as a pro basketball player for a very short time
for
Europe.
The weekend. Yeah, but see, they are cutthroat over there, and I was in Germany. I mean, if you don't perform, they will send you home, and so I came home. I think my plan would have been to work for IBM or, you know, climb the corporate ladder. But I had this idea in my head to do this for after my basketball career is over. And so here it is.
Were you surprised by anything that you learned once you got to the end? Did you look back and think, huh, well, that was not what I expected or hoped going into this?
Yeah, well, there are all kinds of, like I talked about a little bit before, there are all kinds of stereotypes that were shattered for me. You know, I had this, and that's what's been so valuable. Forget the book. That's what's been so valuable for me is to have this experience and to meet actual guys in poverty who are actually living it. Because it's one thing to read about it. It's one thing to hear your parents talk about it or to see it on TV. And so to say I was surprised, no, but it really hit home for me to actually meet these guys and to carry it forward now in my real life that I don't take anything for granted at all. I think that's what's been so valuable for me.
Did any of the people you meet see through you and go, I know what you're about?
No. And I really, like I said before, I wish they would have, because I had my made up story and what I was telling people about my druggy mom and my alcoholic father and this and that. But really, they didn't care. I mean, they're like, dude, let me tell you what, I got stabbed last Tuesday and my mom's on crack. Let me tell you a story. And so that's how it was. It was people really didn't care about me. And that was fine. You know, because I was able to sit back and listen and hear these stories. And in the end, when I did tell everybody, like, you know, the three guys in particular, you know, who I really was, they didn't care. They're like, dude, you're writing our story. We live this for real. And so I think that was really cool that I was doing this as a project and I'm able to write a story that has been lived millions of times over.
When we started talking, you referred to your peers, I guess your peers when you were at college, and the attitudes that you saw among them. What is it you're referring to? What is it you see among some of your peers that in part drove you to do what you did?
I see this sense of entitlement, whether it's money or whatever it is. I just see we feel like something is owed to us, like we don't have to go out and earn it like our parents and our grandparents did. And I see that a lot today. And I don't know if it's from our parents or the media. I don't know what's created this attitude, but it's like we don't feel that we have to go out and earn it for ourselves. And it's at Merrimack College. It's at every school, I feel like. And that's what I talk about now when I go to colleges to speak. That's what I talk about is, hey, listen, you guys got it good. Don't screw it up. You've got to go out and work hard. You've got to earn it just like everybody else has.
You talked about how you were inspired because of your negative reaction to Barbara Ehrenreich's book, Nickel and Dimed. Have you spoken with anyone who has read both Nickel and Dimed and your book and had a reaction to both?
Oh, yeah. And I think those are the best emails that I get when somebody, whether they're on her side or my side, when they email me, because that's the most fair, that's the best response is when somebody's read both of them. And I think the general response has been that, she's right, and I'm right. It's for you to decide. I think that's the whole point here. The economics makes sense on both sides. You know, it is not easy. Nickel and Dimed is right. But at the same time, there are so many people that are going in and doing what I did, and I think that's the difference, that she's right, I'm right. For me, it's all about attitude, and for those that are making it, it's all about attitude.
What happens next? You've written your book, it's published, you're promoting it, but once that's over, what do you do next?
I am speaking to my generation. That is, I am building a speaking career, I am speaking to my generation, and I'm going out there and saying, hey, listen, I am not that cool of a guy, but I've done this and this, and this is why I've been able to do these things. And I think that's what I'm passionate about. That's what's so important to me, to say, hey, listen, this is what you have to do. You can do it. It's so fun to set a goal and achieve it and set another one. And that's what I do now.
So you're not planning to send your resume to IBM and climb the corporate ladder?
Not yet. That'll be my fallback option. Not yet.
Very good. Adam Shepard, author of Scratch Beginnings. He speaks tonight at 7:30 at the Avid Reader on Broadway in Sacramento. Adam Shepard, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, the Coexist Comedy Tour. It's a show with five Northern California comedians, an atheist, a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, and a Buddhist. We'll be right back. Listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio, I'm Jeffrey Callison. Did you disagree with something you heard in Insight? Tell us what it was and why at insight@capradio.org. Coming up this afternoon from Capital Public Radio News, is it time to change the traditional ways that the governor and legislative leaders have worked with each other to craft budget compromises? Plus, what's going to happen to the partly built Auburn Dam and the river water it would have stored now that California regulators have revoked the dam's water rights? Those stories and more later today on All Things Considered. The Coexist Comedy Tour is a group of five stand-up comedians with various religious affiliations. They are an atheist, a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, and a Buddhist. All five live either in the Sacramento or San Francisco areas. Since it was founded last year, the Coexist Comedy Tour has gone on to play a series of top comedy venues in the West. This Friday, Coexist plays Sacramento's Crest Theater. Three of them in our studio, two are on the phone. We'll start with the dudes in the studio, and we'll start specifically with Keith Lowell Jensen.
Hey,
he's the atheist. Hey, Keith. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you, Jeffrey, always.
Remind us how Coexist got started.
Well, comedians like to pick on each other. And so Tapan and I did a lot of shows together. And Tapan Trivedi, the Hindu. And I couldn't help making fun of him for his many, many gods. And he couldn't help making fun of me for my lack of any gods. And really funny stuff, but we never did it on stage. And we were like, we need to find a venue for this because this is hilarious.
Tapan, you are, quote-unquote, the Hindu.
You could totally remove the quotes on that one. But yeah, I'm the Hindu, and we realized that if we took all the gods that I have and if threw a few in the middle and took his godlessness, we could probably make a lot of money. So,
you grew up in India?
I grew up in India, and I've been here about 10 years, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Do your old family and friends in India know about the jokes you're telling about the your religion?
Yes, yes. My mom actually came, when she came here, she got a chance to actually see what I do. And she was like, they pay you for this?
And she prays for me, which I think is very sweet. Someone's got to.
We got some clips, various clips that were recorded at a Coexist Comedy Tour show at the Punchline. Is that right,
at
Keith?
Punchline at the Sacramento
Punchline. Punchline in Sacramento. Well, let's start with one. This is Tapan.
So you guys can relax. I know I look like a Muslim, but I'm not. I'm a Hindu. And there's a difference. They come from Pakistan. We come from India. They don't eat pork. We don't eat beef. They are associated with 9/11. We are associated with 7/11. Yeah, my people did not go through the butt of every slurpy joke for the last 20 years, not to claim it now. And of all the days that they could have done it, they had to do it on September 11th. September 11th is my birthday. That pretty much messed it up for me, right, for the rest of my life. Think about it, people. If you saw a guy who looks like me celebrating on 9/11, what are you going to do?
Oh, my goodness. That's hilarious. I love the 9/11, 7/11. What an inspiration that was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to break it down to the lowest common denominator and make it funny. So it doesn't get any easier than that. And it's true. I mean, on my birthday, like, I usually don't go out of my basement.
That part's not a joke. His birthday is September 11th.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Most of this thing's not a joke.
So what's it like on 9/11 then? It's your birthday, but it's also this dreadful anniversary.
Well, yeah, but, you know, what I the stupid joke that I make about it is like, you know, it balances out because my birth was such an awesome thing.
Yeah. Tapan celebrates his birthday all alone in his basement, like he said. He has a great time. It's happy land down there.
Yeah. We're talking about the Coexist Comedy Tour. It's five comedians of various religious affiliations or none, and they're playing Sacramento's Crest Theatre this Friday evening. Keith Lowell Jensen is the atheist. Tapan Trivedi is the Hindu. Also in our studio is John Ross, who is the Christian.
Yes, the right one. the correct one.
You got the one God as opposed to none or many.
Right. Right in the middle.
I love the picture of you, John, there's a photograph of all five of you, sort of in a stereotypical version of your religion. Describe the persona you have in the picture.
The persona is definitely, sometimes it gets misunderstood as a Mormon, which is fine. And I've had other people, friends of mine, come up and say, you look like a preacher from the 50s, you know, just a hellfire and brimstone goofball.
You're smiling.
I'm smiling, yeah. So it kind of has, you know, it embodies all, you know, the Protestant should be, I guess.
you got the short sleeve white shirt, the nice black tie, and you got what looks like the Bible in your hand.
Right, which I think was the history of rock and roll that they photoshopped the Holy Bible onto.
I thought it was a book of erotic photography.
Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah, but, John, how do you respond when someone knocks on your door with some kind of religious work in their hand and looks, smiles, and wants to speak to you?
You know, usually I'm just like, I know. I'll listen to what they have to say, even if I don't agree with them. A lot of Christians I don't agree with too, so it gives me an opportunity to go, hey, what do you think about this or that, you know?
And he proselytizes back.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes.
It's like a telemarketer calling you and you're trying to sell him something back.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I like to get into their head, though, too, see exactly what they have to say and why they're doing what made you wake me up, you know, or what made you, you know, or what made you come to my door and tell me about this, because I don't do that to people.
Well, speaking to people knocking at the door, we have a clip of Keith Lowell Jensen, our atheist, one of his jokes in the Coexist Comedy Tour.
Knock, knock!
Who's there?
The atheist!
The atheist who?
I'm sorry, messed that one up. I forgot, we actually don't knock on your door and annoy you when you're doing other things. Forgive me, just go back to whatever you were doing. I'm sorry.
Well, Keith, what do you do when the door knocks?
You know what? People are surprised, but unlike a lot of atheists, I don't mind being proselytized to. I come from a very religious family, and I used to talk to them at length, and now I usually just tell them, they come with kids a lot of the time, and I'll tell them, look, I have beliefs that you and or your children may find offensive, and I'll share them with you if you wish. And they usually say, oh, that's okay, and they leave quickly. So, but I'm always polite to them because I appreciate, you know, if I had your salvation in my pocket, I'd be kind of a jerk not to share it with you for a reasonable profit.
When you say you come, profit with an F or the PH?
Either way, a little of each.
you said you come from a very religious family. What religion?
Christian. My oldest brother is a minister.
Really?
Yeah. He has Christ Saves tattooed on his belly.
Wow.
Which is how he proselytizes while doing Ultimate Fighting. And I'm not joking.
What does he think about A, your atheism, and B, what you do with your atheism as a stand-up comic?
He loves it. He's a big fan of the coexist concept, and he is, I would say that he's, and I mean this as a compliment, very Hindu in his Christianity, where for him it's more about your deeds than your beliefs, and he knows that I live according to my morals, and I'm trying to be a good guy, and that's really important to me, and he says that matters more than anything else. So, and then he tries to convince the other relatives that I'm really not going to burn in hell.
Right. Let's listen to a clip of John Ross, the Christian comedian in the Coexist comedy tour.
God always gets blamed for things, and it bugs me. Like, there was this lady I was talking to, and she said, you know, God took my Aunt Susan. And I always wonder if God wants to interject in conversations and be like, look, Aunt Susan was 400 pounds. I had nothing to do with it. Hometown Buffet took Aunt Susan. And I went to this, like, these Christian dances that were kind of weird. They were regulated by the church, you know? And there was one of these stupid rules of this church that, like, if during a slow dance, you always had to keep a Bible width between you and the partner you were with. So I went out and bought the Bible on CD.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. What's that musical sound in the background there?
It's called the omnichord. It's a little instrument that I play sometimes. That I hold sometimes. It has a little beat, and it kind of hypnotizes the crowd into listening. And
so you're just randomly playing chords and
yeah, it's kind of like a auto harp, electric auto harp. And with any good joke that I feel like I have, it makes a little ring sound that goes bling, you know. And if there's a bad one, I could, you know,
do it in reverse,
you know. And so it's just a little gimmick that I'm trying to get rid of. So thanks for bringing it up.
We got two other members of the Coexist comedy tour, but they're not in our studio. They're actually on the phone. Let's start with Sammy Obaid. Sammy is the Buddhist. He lives in San Francisco. Sammy, welcome to Insight.
Hi.
How did you get involved in this?
They found me outside of a show one time. Sapan, the Hindu, approached me and asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And so I jumped in it. And yeah.
Did he know you were a Buddhist when he saw you?
He probably figured it out, yeah.
Tapan, did you actually?
No, he doesn't remember because he does a lot of things that he shouldn't, but
enough said.
But no, I actually asked him what his religious affiliation was, and he was there with his entire family, and his family, once you meet his family, it's like his father's a Muslim, his mother's a Christian, and he actually said he went to UC Berkeley and he was a Buddhist. I'm like, if that's not made for the Coexist comedy tour, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
So I asked him to send me a demo, and he sent me a 7-minute demo of him doing 1 minute of religious material at 7 different venues.
Which we were really important. We're like, wait, we just talked to him a day ago. How many venues does he hit in a night? Like, his ambition is just incredible, which is probably why he's the big winner in a competition. Don't you tell him about that, Sammy?
Tell us, Sammy.
He's so modest.
No, I mean, that's about it. I'm pretty sure you said it.
No, we haven't yet. We want you to say it.
Oh, okay.
Brag a little. See, it's his Buddhist modesty.
Yes.
Well, Sammy Obed actually won the San Jose Improv Comedy Competition and the Rooster Teeth Feathers Comedy Competition in the same year, a feat which has not been accomplished by anybody.
Goodness.
So far.
Sammy, do you use much Buddhist material when you're doing stand-up outside of Coexist Comedy Tour?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes I don't. You know, religion can be sensitive to certain audiences, but you know, Buddhism is pretty neutral, so I don't really get into much trouble with that. Though I have a lot of the religious material that I developed because of working with Coexist, I use in my routine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sammy Obeid is the Buddhist in the five comedian Coexist Comedy Tour. The fifth is also on the phone, joining us from the Bay Area, Tissa Hami, who is Muslim. Tissa, welcome back to Insight.
Thank you.
You grew up in what kind of family? Remind us.
I grew up in an Iranian family in the Boston area.
And were you raised quite Muslim, very Muslim, or just lightly Muslim?
Muslim light. My parents are very strong culturally, and I think at this point the Iranian culture and religion are so intertwined that it's hard to say where one begins and the other ends. So they didn't pray five times a day, but we grew up in a pretty strict household, and I think a lot of the influence was religious.
I mentioned to John Ross earlier that I really liked his persona in the photograph that promotes a Coexist Comedy Tour. I love your persona, too. You're in very strict religious garb, and you've got what looks like a big stone in your hand.
That's for John.
I do. That's what I use to defend myself against John.
If he's knocking at your door.
Exactly.
We have a clip of Tissa, also from the Punchline show.
Now, see, I guess people are very curious about the Middle East these days, though. Because I get asked a lot of thought-provoking questions. Like, do people in the Middle East really live in tents? Only when Bush bombs their houses.
Oh my goodness, that's bittersweet.
Yeah, it's painful because it's true.
Yeah,
and awesome when she does it in front of a conservative audience, which we have seen.
Yeah, Tissa doesn't pull punches.
The five of you cover a variety of religious and non-religious perspectives, but there's one comedian, the one religion, notable religion missing, is Judaism. And last time I spoke with Coexist Comedy Tour, you had a Jewish comedian. What happened to the Jewish guy?
We will again. There's a lot of religions to cover. So the joke answer is that we're between Jews. and the other joke answer is, where are you going to find a Jew in comedy? You know, but we have a great Jewish comedian,
Moshe Kasher.
Moshe Kasher is going to perform with us down in L.A. and Brian Mallow performed with us recently
in Stockton.
So we're just trying to convince one of them to stick around. But with a Muslim on the tour, it's tough. You know,
when I first spoke with you,
I'm holding a rock.
Yes. When I first spoke with you all, it sounded like a great concept, but you know, you weren't quite sure where it was going to go. But it's actually gone quite well. You've been touring around, playing a lot of venues. Tapan, were you surprised?
We were actually pleasantly surprised by the kind of reaction that we got. We never anticipated this to go as far as it has, but
at least not as quickly.
Not as quickly, right? But we are very happy with what, and you know, the people of Sacramento have always been really, really helpful to us, as I'm sure that they will this Friday.
But, you're doing a concert, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We thought we'd throw something together.
But we were, like, Portland was very
amazing
to us. Like,
oh, it blew us away. We showed up and we're like, because it did happen to us once that we went to a club and there was this huge line, and then we found out the line was for the movie playing
the next door. Yeah.
Oh. So we get to Portland and it's the same thing. I was like, oh, the restaurant's hopping tonight, that's all. But John goes in the theater and comes out and goes, Keith, it's packed. The theater's packed.
Like, they're all for us. They're all for us.
Very good. Well, that's the Coexist Comedy Tour. They're at the Crest Theater in Sacramento this Friday evening. In our studio, Keith Lowell Jensen, Tapan Trivedi, and John Ross. On the phone, Sammy Obeid and Tissa Hami. They are the five comedians in the Coexist Comedy Tour in its current incarnation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having
me.
Thank you.
That's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Go to capradio.org/insight for links on our guests and topics. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. The senior producer is Jen Picard. Thank you for joining us. A new local organization is calling for all gays and lesbians nationwide to call in sick one day this week. On the next Insight, Tina Reynolds tells you what Equality Action Now hopes to accomplish through the nationwide Day Without a Gay event. Also, a British pantomime-style version of Cinderella playing in Sacramento. We talk with director Peggy Shannon and composer Greg Coffin about this musical. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Join me for Insight.
Tomorrow at 2 on KXJZ.